Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
The first taste of rare bourbon you finally got your hands on. That's nice. At Caskers.com, we make this experience easy. Caskers is a one-stop spirit curator with an impressive selection of exclusive, sought-after, rare, and household names in the realm of premium spirits and champagne. Discover the top flavors of the year now by going to Caskers.com and using code WELCOME10 for $10 off your first purchase. Get $10 off your first purchase with code WELCOME10 at Caskers.com.
Prepare your ears, humans. Happy, Sad, Confused begins now.
Today on Happy, Sad, Confused, Andrew Garfield on Mainstream and those Spider-Man rumors. Plus, a sneak preview of Happy, Sad, Confused Game Night with Sam Heughan, Colin O'Donoghue, and Catherine McNamara. Hey guys, I'm Josh Horowitz, and yes, as I alluded to, this is a packed show. We have a lot going on. Andrew Garfield is the main event, a huge interview with him where we cover a ton. But before we get to that, here's what I want to mention. As you may have heard by now, or if you haven't, here's the lowdown. We are launching a new series called Happy, Sad, Confused Game Night. It is a video series. It is seen exclusively on the new Patreon page for Happy, Sad, Confused. You guessed it. You can find it at patreon.com/happysadconfused. So what we're doing over there is we're trying new stuff out, and we are our flagship big exciting thing is we are going to be filming these kind of really loose, fun game nights with actors that I love, actors that you've seen and heard on my podcasts and on my shows for Comedy Central and MTV. And this first episode is fantastic. It has Sam Heughan, it has Colin O'Donoghue, it has Kat McNamara, all of whom have been on the podcast before. But this is basically 45 minutes of us just being super silly, playing all sorts of crazy party games. I know you guys are going to dig it. I'm so happy with it. We've got a lot more amazing guests to come on game night. That episode is up right now on the Patreon page, patreon.com/happysadconfused. Now, if you don't want, if you have your doubts, maybe you don't want to go full in on the Patreon thing, and I totally get it. It is all good. But if you want to hear a little tease of it, after my conversation with Andrew Garfield on the podcast today, stick around after the Andrew Garfield chat, and you'll hear about 5 minutes of some fun chit-chat with Sam, Colin, and Kat. That conversation, by the way, at the end of this podcast, is not on the video of Happy, Sad, Confused Game Night. Does that make sense? Maybe a little confusing, but here's all you need to know. If you want a little taste of Sam, Kat, and Colin, stick around to after the podcast. If you want the whole shebang, if you want a ginormous video episode of Happy, Sad, Confused Game Night, and trust me, you do, go to the Patreon page. It's been long in the making. I'm really proud of it. We're also going to be having video versions of the podcast when available. It's not always going to be the case. On the Patreon page, plus tons of other extras, merch, Happy, Sad, Confused merch, exclusive announcements, early access to the podcast. I've really tried to deliver you guys an experience worth becoming a Patreon. So check it out. See how it goes. I hope you guys enjoy it. Anyway, back here on the mothership in the podcast, which will, by the way, always remain free. The guest today is Andrew Garfield. Andrew Garfield, one of our finest actors working. It's been a minute since he's been on the podcast. I think way back when in 2015 was the last time he was on the pod. So there was a lot to catch up on. He is in a new film that opens this Friday. It is called Mainstream. It's from Gia Coppola. It is a bizarre, small art film really tackling with some of the most important issues of our time, namely our preoccupation with social media and how it can destroy us, how it can compromise us, and it features a tremendous performance at the center of it from Andrew Garfield. So I recommend you checking that out, if for no other reason to see Andrew do his thing, and he never gives less than 100%. So that's That's the main reason why Andrew caught up with me today, but we cover so much more. I mean, the big thing for you comic book geeks like myself out there is we get into it about Spider-Man and all those Spider-Man rumors. You know as well as I do, everybody's saying Andrew Garfield is in the new Spider-Man film. Well, he is pretty definitive in my conversation. He's not pretty definitive. He is definitive about those rumors in this chat, more so than I was expecting him to be. So stick around. There's a lot of Spider-Man talk, a lot about those rumors. We talk about the aspects of the Tom Holland version of Spider-Man that he wishes he could have played. So if you're here for Spider-Man talk, it's in there. Plus, we talk about Tick, Tick, Boom, Andrew Garfield's first musical that he is starring in. He has already shot it with Lin-Manuel Miranda behind the camera. Plus, The Eyes of Tammy Faye, which I can't wait for, in which Andrew plays Jim Baker opposite one of our favorites, Jessica Chastain, as Tammy Faye Baker. Plus, Andrew on his comfort movie, Paddington 2. If that weren't enough to make you happy that he chose Paddington 2 as his comfort movie, the story behind it, well worth listening to. It's one of my favorites in some time on Happy, Sad, Confused. So, man, yeah, this is a big episode. There's a lot going on. Okay, so here's what's coming up. Main event with Andrew Garfield. And remember, stick around after Andrew Garfield for a little chit-chat with Sam Heughan, Colin O'Donoghue, and Kat McNamara. And for the big jamboree, the video version of Happy, Sad, Confused Game Night, the first episode, go to patreon.com/happysadconfused. Let me know what you guys think. I want to hear from you. And I hope you guys enjoy this conversation with Andrew. By the way, I educated him on how to record on QuickTime on his computer. So if nothing else, Andrew Garfield got a new life skill out of this conversation. Here's me and Andrew Garfield. Andrew Garfield has just learned a new skill thanks to Josh Horowitz, guys.
That's all we got time for. See you guys next week.
For those that are just tuning in, yeah. I just taught Andrew how to use QuickTime. Buddy, it's, as I said, for the record, it brings me so much joy to see a familiar face, someone I love and adore. I hope you're doing okay, man.
It's nice to see you too. That's very, very sweet. I'm doing well. I hope you're doing well. You seem to be doing well.
As you know, it's all smoke and mirrors around here. But yes, all things considered.
You haven't aged a day since please. I last saw you.
We're both just bathing ourselves in oil of Olay. It's all the secrets. I think the last time, maybe one of the last times I saw you, at least for an on-camera interview, might've been, maybe it was as far back as this, Toronto, Claire Foy. I feel like that interview ended with like us miming sex acts with microphones.
I feel like I would remember that, but
oh, you've blocked it out through therapy. Okay, I haven't. I guess what I'm saying is this can go anywhere,
right? And it's been a long time, and I'm sorry that I haven't called. I've been doing mostly a play for the last like 4 years. I did Angels in America for a long time, and
that was an easy one though. That was just like one you could just
it
sort
was
of
just
like
a little. Yeah. but so it's odd. Like, so my movie life has been less active because Tony Kushner is very demanding, and his ideas are very demanding, and you know, theater is very demanding, but I wouldn't have changed it for the world. But it's nice to be reconnected.
Yeah. So you, I'm just curious as I kind of reconnect with all these people I haven't seen in so long. I think you've done some shooting in the last year. Yeah, maybe Eyes of Tammy Faye you did, or Tick, Tick, Boom, right?
Both of those things. Yeah.
Got it. In between those or during those, I'm just curious. Like I feel like all our consumption habits changed a little bit. I always look forward to the end of every year when Steven Soderbergh puts out his list of like every form of media he consumed. I don't know. You see that?
Yeah.
So high low art that you consumed in the last year. What were you into in 2020?
Yeah, man. You know, 2020 was a year for me that where I could watch television really for the first time because I haven't had the opportunity to catch up on TV, the great TV that's been made and movies. But to be honest, like I really got into TV. Like 000, I think, was one of my favorite shows of the last year. I just thought that was so thrilling and exciting with great performance, everything. It was just a total experience.
I haven't seen that. That's like Dane DeHaan and Andrea Riseborough. Do I have
Andrea Riseborough, yeah. Dane DeHaan, Stefano Salima is the director, and it's set it's multinational, so it's set in Italy and Mexico and New Orleans and in the middle of the ocean. It's, oh my God, man, it's so epic in scale. Cobra Kai.
I got into that too for the first time. We binged all the way through. We did it.
The fucking best.
So satisfying, right?
So satisfying. And I think, I mean, I'm so curious about why I love it so much, because and it's definitely a nostalgia feeling and a kind of comfort feeling with all the kind of like cuts back to young Miyagi and Daniel LaRusso. And but I think it's kind of ingenious that how they've flipped thematically, you know, this thing of, you know, no one is born bad and nature versus nurture, and how if Johnny May had had a different experience growing up, then maybe, and now seeing how, you know, Daniel is raising his daughter and his son, and how like their life of privilege may not, you know, be all that, you know, beneficial to them in the long run. A dissertation of Cobra Kai is being written as we speak.
You're right, because it's a good version of what we've seen way too much of, which is all these nostalgia kind of legacy sequel things. But that's the smart version, and turning it on its head a little bit and treating it with the intelligence. Yeah, it's broad. It's kind of like it's obvious in some ways, but it's also, yeah, I think you're right. It's clever.
And the fight sequences, like the end of season two fight, I think it's end of season two fight sequence in the high school is like the long shots and the whip hands and the steady cam. I'm just like, these kids are beating the shit out of each other. And how are we allowed to watch this and not feel like this is problematic? I think there's also something interesting in that as well about, the main character is super problematic in this, like dumped into this particular culture and winking to that and nodding to it. And also kind of, it loosens the conversation a little bit so that actually you can, by making fun of itself, it's kind of, I don't know, I dig it. I really, really dig it.
So you mentioned the word that comes up a lot when I'm talking about people, what people have been watching, which is comfort. I was going to get to it later, but let's just get to it now. And then we'll work our way around back to mainstream if it's okay.
Yeah.
I asked for your comfort movie. A lot of people have been going like, you know, I saw this 12 times when I was 10 years old. Yeah. By my math, your comfort movie, you saw at the ripe old age of maybe 34. So I don't know what that says about you.
Well, it says I had no comfort before I was 34.
Better late than never.
Oh, I've been so uncomfortable until then. No, it's interesting. So you asked me the question and I thought about it hard and I felt like, because it's an important question. It's actually the most important question. And like, there are thousands of things that I could have chosen. I could have talked about the Goonies or Teen Wolf or Back to the Future or Ghostbusters or Indiana Jones and the Temple of Doom, weirdly. You
opening
know,
sequence, please come on.
So there is like a kind of smorgasbord that I could have chosen, because I am all about comfort. I'm all about Tom Hanks comfort. I'm all about, you know, Joe versus the Volcano. I'm all about Big. I'm you know, I really could have gone multiple directions. But weirdly, when I thought about a movie that I've been watching this year a few times, it was Paddington 2. For anyone who's seen Paddington 2, it needs no explanation. It is an actual masterpiece of storytelling, of satire, of hijinks, of physical comedy, like, and of just exquisite, artful framing and filmmaking, with of course the final moment of I won't give it away for anyone who hasn't seen it, when you know who arrives at the door after, you know, years of being separated, and she arrives, and it's profound, like it's profoundly moving. And I'll tell you why it's comforting to me. It's a very specific reason. When I was doing Angels in America in New York, I would go to a friend's house every Sunday after the matinee on Sunday, which was my last performance of the week. And then I would have Sunday afternoon, Monday and Tuesday to recuperate before I started up again on Wednesday. And so Sunday afternoon, evening was like a ritual for me, where I would go to my friend's place, who's one of my best friends in New York City. I won't tell you his name, because he likes being low key, but he's a massage therapist. And so he would just iron out all the kinks, But also he likes smoking weed, and I occasionally like smoking weed. I'm not a big weed smoker by any stretch of the imagination, but it's something that I will occasionally do recreationally. We would always smoke weed before he would work on me, and then we would watch RuPaul's Drag Race. That was our kind of ritual. And there's no better Sunday night than that.
Right.
And he's a musical theater buff, so we were talking about musical theater. It's just the best night ever, every Sunday. And his boyfriend would cook a beautiful like spaghetti and meatballs, and then it's just like, yeah, that was my,
this is the recipe to heal yourself after Angels in America 8 shows a week. Yeah.
And I was in the middle of the run. And one Sunday I arrived and I was wiped. I was so exhausted. And anyone who knows that show knows what I mean. And I got to the place, I was like, give me that fucking joint. And I just got so high because I was so like, I just need to be out of my head and blah, blah, blah. And I went, I'm a sensitive little flower. So I just went too hard. And I lay down on the table, and I was like, oh, hold on. I sat up and he was like, you okay, buddy? And I'm like, yeah, let me give that another try. I lay back down. I was like, wait a minute. And I was like, buddy? He was like, yeah. And I'm like, I'm too high. And he was like, okay, buddy, just come over to the window and put your face against this nice cold window and I'll just talk to you for the next 45 minutes. And that was that. And like, he kind of talked to me, you know, when, I don't know, anyone who knows, who's had that experience, when you feel like you're just a cloud of thoughts and you don't have a body anymore and you just can't wait for the experience to be over. So I just had my face against this nice cold window while my friend tried to just remind me that I am incarnate and that I'm not just a cloud of existential anguish.
Right.
And he got me to the place, like any good friend would, to the place where he could get me into a cab when, and I was nice. I was like coming back to myself and he was like, just go home and chill and whatever. And then he was like, hey, maybe give Paddington 2 a try. So I got on the couch and I had like, I wrapped myself up in like a blanket and I'm just like, I'm okay. I'm okay. I'm not just thoughts. I'm a person with feelings and a higher body. And I put Paddington 2 on, and just as it was coming on, I got to that really lovely place of being high. It was all equalizing out.
Right.
And suddenly I had maybe one of the best nights of my whole life.
You win the best reason for a comfort movie. I've been doing the comfort movies for about a year, and you, my friend, win the prize. It hit you at the right your cerebral cortex was right in tune with it. You were chill enough. It was there for you.
And it is a part of me now. And it's a part of me now.
And what's really funny, I don't know if you're aware of this, like you're in the zeitgeist because literally as we tape this, like 2 days ago, did you see the headlines about Paddington 2?
No.
Seriously? I thought you were just like ripped this out of like Google News.
What was it?
So Paddington 2 has surpassed Citizen Kane as the best reviewed movie of all time. Yeah. I kid you not.
Well, I mean, the proof is in the pudding, baby. Like, it's, you know
how just, to pick them.
Just lay your eyes on it, you'll get it. It's, you know, that's great. Oh, I love that. Yeah. I love that. I had no idea. It is, but it is absolutely brilliant. It's really brilliant. It's just
Hugh Grant,
a great movie.
Hugh Grant deserved some award recognition for his performance.
Sure. Seriously, sure. Right? Yeah, I mean, all of them, like Sally Hawkins, Hugh Bonneville, Ben Whishaw, like it's like, ah, it's just.
Do you want a part in the Paddington multiverse? Do you have have your eyes on a certain role?
There's a reason why I said yes to this interview, Josh.
Yeah, this is the.
And we've achieved it. So.
Yeah, exactly. Eat your heart out, Scorsese. I would need Paddington 3.
I would love to do. I would love to be a part of the Paddington canon in some way.
It's a great pick, man, and a great story behind it. Sure. So the reason we're catching up today is this fascinating new movie, Mainstream, which I very much dug. And it is, you know, it's like some of the work you've done. It's already been a bit divisive. And, you know, that's what you want out of art, right? Talk to me a little bit about, I don't know, this character is fascinating to me. It's a little bit like Howard Beale and Network. It's a little bit of like Robin Williams and the Fisher King. There's some interesting elements to him. Is it the character in this case that jumped out off the page or what?
It's so Gia Coppola is the director and writer, and she's been wanting to make this film for a long time, for a bunch of years. She's had like a feeling about her own experience and relationship with the world and with social media specifically, yeah, that she's wanted to express. And Gia has become a friend. She became a friend of mine. And I really, really wanted to just help her to get her. There's a scene in the film where Maya Hawke's character vomits out a bunch of emojis into a sink. And that feels like what Gia needed to do with this film.
Right.
So I was so grateful that she asked me to help and kind of hold her hair back as she did it. So you know what I'm saying? Like, it felt, yeah, like a real opportunity to help out a friend that I really believe in as an artist and I really love. And it the schedules lined up so that I had the free 4 weeks that I could come and play. And for me, you know, one of the things that was enticing for me about doing it was, as you say, it was an opportunity to get a bit weird and to not have pressure on it being like a studio film or like a big budget. It was like, and it's an art film. It's a film that is experimental and so that was one of the real draws for me, because obviously I'm not just going to make a film for a friend just because they asked me, but like it has to have a reason for me to get an experience out of it as well. Otherwise I'm not a charity case. Like so what was in it for me was to work with Gia, because I really believe in her and I love her, and I wanted to assist in her vision. And in a more selfish way, I got to have a space where I got to access some parts of myself or some parts of this character or parts of myself that I didn't want to acknowledge were there, or that none of us really want to acknowledge, like shadow aspects of, like, you know, the kind of thing where you look at someone in the world and you go, oh my God, thank God I'm not them. Like that is so off-putting, and it, you know, that you can feel with a lot of social media stars, of like the kind of like
should I be seeing this?
The desperate, yeah, and also like, oh my God, like it's so fascinating because it's so outside the box of convention and so provocative and so, in a lot of cases, needing of attention and kind of overly exposed, which felt like, I was like, oh, there's something so, if I can access that in a way that's kind of safe for me, right, in a container of making a movie and have fun, not care how I look, not care how people view the character, be totally liberated, risk being annoying, risk being grotesque, risk being like disgusting, disturbing, beguiling, whatever it is, and positive things as well. Like, really, like, you know, I think about someone like Kanye West, who is a complete creative genius, and he, for me, he can oscillate between I'm like totally overwhelmed by his talent and drawn in, to kind of repulsed, to then drawn back in, and then kind of like, you know, I just, so that as an actor,
because yeah, I think sounds for, like, yeah, because so I think freeing, for act- I would imagine, yeah,
freeing, because I think a lot of actors can get stuck in caring or considering making decisions or choices or creating characters based on wanting to be liked and wanting to not rock the boat in that way, to kind of like image, like caring about one's image. I think that there's a trap that actors can, yeah, fall into, where they're more concerned with whether they're liked rather than what they want to express. So for me, it was an exercise in, like, I remember when I was a kid and I was very fucking annoying to my dad and to my brother. And I was a monkey boy that wanted lots of attention, that was you know, tugging on their shirts and kind of making a mess of their risk game, the game of risk that they had been playing for 5 hours. And I just came and like just destroyed the whole thing. And it was just like, get the fuck out, 4-year-old Andrew, 6-year-old Andrew, whatever you are. And then, of course, we all learn in our, well, for the most part, in our family dynamics, we learn to exile parts of ourselves that that we fear aren't welcome in the household. That maybe, oh man, if I keep being annoying, maybe they won't feed me, or maybe they won't. They'll put me out on the street if I keep annoying them. So I better shave off that part of myself. But you know, those parts of ourselves don't go anywhere. They remain there. They just become if we put them, whatever we put in the basement just grows in power without integration. So for me, it was like kind of opening the basement and going, okay, what are the parts of me that were kind of exiled as a child that I get to now? And it was terrifying most days, because I was like, I don't want to be this person. Like, I've spent my life like avoiding being
society tells me to like kill this guy, to not never show him again. Yeah,
exactly. So I think for me, what was beguiling about the character that Gia was wanting to create, and we created it, you know, it's really her vision, and she let me loose. She let me get very loose and experimental and free on set on the day, and especially for the last 2 weeks where we were doing some like game show stuff and more kind of outlandish stuff.
Yeah.
Like the talk show and the final monologue, and a lot of it was improvised, and a lot of it was just kind of it's very rare that you get to create something in a very uncensored way. So I was just excited to access that in my own creative kind of like capacity to free myself up in that way and really not care how it's perceived. There's something kind of fun about that.
I always thought you would end up naked on Hollywood Boulevard with a prosthetic penis. And I just didn't think it would happen this soon.
No, I know. I know. Listen,
that's a sequence that I'm sure people are going to talk about. They probably already talked about. I'm just fascinated by the filmmaking behind it, because it feels Borat-ish. It feels guerrilla. Was there some aspect to like throw him out on the street, use long lenses and see what happens?
Oh yeah, definitely. Yeah, that was the whole thing. I think, you know, obviously, you know, someone, you know, Gia and myself, we both have a relationship with Spike Jonze, who, you know, we both, you know, admire so much in all of his creativity. But, you know, we would talk to him about Jackass and Johnny Knoxville, obviously, who ultimately came and had a part in the film, and about how to set up something like that. You know, I haven't seen Eric Andre's new show.
It's really good.
Film yet,
it's
but
really
I hear it's fantastic thing. I'm really excited to see it. But yeah, so that was definitely a thrilling aspect of the filming. And I remember Gia being just very touched. She was weirdly like, her eyes welled up after the first take of that Hollywood Boulevard scene. She was like, we're only going to get one take at this. So, and she was so concerned for me doing it. She was like, are you sure you want to? And I did it. We did the first take, and she was like crying. She was like, this is the best day of my life, and I can't believe that you did this. And I'm sitting there going like the cat who ate all the cream. I'm like, let's do it again. Let's just do it. It's like, how often do we get a chance to get your butt cheeks out on Hollywood Boulevard without being arrested? Like, it's you know, it's, life is short. And you know, it was one of those moments of like, if I'm given an opportunity to either do this or not do this, I would rather do it. Just
it's
to
also
know what
fascinating
it
to look
like
at your career, like you know, for someone that's not been on social media, you've had this interesting relationship, like you're kind of like doing this like boyhood experiment where every 10 years you do a film that really grapples with social media, obviously social network in a much different way. Mm. And now this, which feels very current and feels like really about just what every teenager, let alone human being on the planet Earth, is dealing with. You know, it's always fascinating to talk to somebody that's like just like has stayed off of it successfully. Yeah. And I think that's probably for your sanity, and you're a wiser man than me. But like, what is your relationship now? Has it evolved? Do you lurk out there? You see the memes of yourself. You've seen all that stuff.
What do you mean? Like,
well, meaning like even just like using moments from your films, or Dylan O'Brien recreating.
Oh yeah, yeah, I saw that. Scene. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Like, I mean. Cool. So, I mean, I guess I'm just curious of like what your attitude has been, and has it evolved over the years in terms of like being a part of culture? Because to remove yourself from social media is a kind of a big step. You're removing yourself from like what 99% of us interact with 10 hours a day.
Right. Yeah. It's such a big question and conversation. You say very generously, I'm wiser than you for not being on it, but I think it's more, I think I'm just too sensitive. Like I would be too sensitive.
You know what? Yeah.
And maybe that is wise that I know that, but like,
right.
It doesn't come from a place of strength. You know what I'm saying? Like it doesn't come from a place of like, I do also think it's not, I don't know. It's so, so tricky because I do have like a kind of, a creeper account on Twitter that I follow and I look at news and I follow people that I'm interested in. You know, so I suppose it's more voyeuristic? Is that hypocritical? Probably. There are some funny, brilliant people on Twitter, and there's no better way of getting news from the sources that you want to that you trust, and to follow subjects that you're fascinated by.
I think we're all finding our, like, you need to figure out what works for you. It's different for every single person, and you know, temperament wise, et cetera. And even which platform it like makes sense for you. So it seems like you found the right one. Yeah.
Yeah. But I think for anyone who watched that documentary, The Social Dilemma, which I think does really well in kind of telling us what we already instinctively know, but laying it out for us in a very visible, visceral, unflinching way, in a very simple way of like, you are a guinea pig in a research experiment and it's addiction research and you've been made an addict in the process. And right. no one is exempt. As long as we are using these devices, none of us are exempt. So I think there's something to be said for awareness of that. And you know, I just spent the last 3 weeks in without my phone, really, on a road trip, living in a van for 3 weeks, just kind of camper vanning, and the difference in my parasympathetic nervous system, the difference in my ability to listen, the difference in my ability to read a book, the difference in my ability to connect with a friend is palpable. There's no denying that these technologies are at this point are having very specific detrimental effects to how we interact.
Well, I was even talking to an actor the other day who was lamenting like the biggest difference in working on a set now versus 20 years ago is as soon as you yell cut on 99% of the sets, every actor's face goes straight down to a phone.
Oh, really?
I mean, I expect that Scorsese probably doesn't allow phones like the Tarantino kind of rule, right?
Right,
but,
yeah.
But
I haven't experienced... I haven't experienced that on the last couple of things I made with Tick Tick Boom and Tammy Faye. I didn't notice that particularly. I do feel that there is a big, especially during the pandemic, there's been a big renaissance, and you know, and you can tell that the culture is ready for this conversation now with the fact that Octopus Teacher and Nomadland both won top honors at the Academy Awards. It means that, and the fact that they've been viewed by so many people. There's a hunger in culture right now for that reconnection with nature, that reconnection to our true nature. There's something naturally occurring where we're being drawn back to more primordial forces and a sense of belonging in the natural world, away from this constant obsession with ascension that we have as a culture towards we will colonize a new planet and we will bring all the same bullshit there. It's like, wait a minute, can we just like descend here for a bit? Like descend meaning like get down into ourselves in a way that, you know, I know it's really scary for most people or all of us. None of us want to kind of, you know, a descent is never as appealing as an ascent, but if we keep ascending, we just end up like Icarus and then we're just, you know, we're burned by the sun.
Exactly.
we're all aware of where that goes. So
I'm fascinated. When you were talking about mainstream and the reason for doing this from an acting perspective and how freeing it is, and you know, this is the kind of stuff you can't necessarily do. And 99% of like studio films or films of a certain budget with pressures and expectations.
I
think back to you know, I first met you on the Spider-Man run nearly 10 years ago, probably, maybe even more than that. Yeah. And, you know, since those two Spider-Man films, if you look at the choices you've made, you look at the plays you've done, you look at some of the films you've done under the Silver Lake and this, these are not like, you know, these can be, again, these are not the obvious choices. You haven't done a franchise film, quote unquote, since Spider-Man.
Yeah.
Is that is that something that's crossed your mind? Like, yes, I know there was good and bad experiences associated with Spider-Man, but coming off of that, like, I need to recalibrate. I need to kind of get back to what's important to me as a human and as an actor, and not let the business stuff get in the way.
No, I think so. I realized, you know, you only realize by doing, right? By going down a path and then going, oh, wait, I need to go this way. And for whatever reason, in retrospect, you know, you can figure out why you move in a certain direction after you've gone down one tributary. So for me, I think if I could analyze it, it would be, I realized that I wanted to be an actor. That's really like, I always wanted to be an actor, but I think I realized that was being threatened by this specter of being so known and celebrity, and that kind of
commodification of your celebrity and career. Yeah.
Right. Which was never interesting to me, but when you do a film like that, there are things that are out of your control that happen, just in terms of being known by a great number of people on the planet for this one thing. And this was something that I realized very quickly, oh, that's a trap. That's a trap. That's a prison, a gilded one. And someone might want that prison, and I'm not knocking that in any way, shape, or form. But for me, I knew very clearly, I want to work with Scorsese. I want to do Death of a Salesman. I want to work on Angels in America. And as you're talking about mainstream, it's like I want to be an actor first, and an artist, if I could use that word first, and someone who creates from the gut and isn't concerned with if the North Star is telling stories that I want to tell, having experiences that I want to have, and being a part of things that have soul, that my soul feels called to, that's the North Star. And anything else outside of that doesn't really matter. And if fame follows that, if money follows that, if failure follows that, if destitution follows that, that's a life well lived as far as I'm concerned. So that's what it is for me. So I think with Spider-Man, oh man, I just appreciate Spider-Man so much. I have more and more appreciation for that period of my life the further away I get from it. Because when you're so close to it, you're wrestling underwater, and you're trying to figure out how to navigate. And now, thank God, I've had the opportunities that I've had with Mike Nichols and with Scorsese and with Mel Gibson and with, you know, Ramin Barani and with Tony Kushner and with Arthur Miller and Philip Seymour Hoffman. And like, thank God I've had those experiences so that I can now go, you know, okay, I feel freer. I feel like I've been digging other holes and planting other other trees and growing them so that it's not just this one towering behemoth of an oak that I'm gonna forever be in the shade of. So I want to continue doing that. That's really the intention going forward, is to remain free enough to follow that soul's calling, if I could say it that way.
Did you I'm just curious, did you read Mark Harris's Mike Nichols biography yet?
I haven't read it yet. He interviewed me for it very late in the day. I don't know if I was included in it, but I'm very excited to read it. But also at the same time, my experience of Mike was so, I just kind of want to keep it sacred and pure in a way. Like I started to read this other great book about it's only what's it called? Life Isn't Everything, which is a collection of interviews with.
Oh, I have that. The oral history, basically. About Mike as well. Yeah.
And it's really beautiful and anecdotal and gorgeous. But at the same time, I'm like, oh man, I feel blessed enough that I have such an intimate relationship with him, even though he's no longer incarnate. I feel kind of close with him spiritually still. That's plenty. That's more than enough for me. That he's an ancestor in a way. You know what I mean? I can think of him and talk to him as an ancestor. It's quite beautiful.
Speaking of theater, you've worked with Lin-Manuel Miranda recently on Tick Tick Boom, his feature directing debut. As far as I can recall, this is your first musical. This is a step. I mean, do you feel more exposed in Tick Tick Boom than running around with the prosthetic penis on Hollywood Boulevard?
Yes.
Wow, that's saying something.
Singing is the most vulnerable thing for anyone who sings. It's like being naked on Broadway. It's fuck, man. So first of all, I love Lin so much. I love him. This elemental force of nature who also is kind of an 11-year-old, just like picking up a VHS camera. And he's just like, he is an elemental man. Like, I'm just so blown away by his genius. And so him asking me to do Tick Tick Boom was because Hamilton is one of my favorite pieces of art of the last, you know, however many decades that I've been alive. But when he asked me to do it, so it's funny. so the person who told me to go and watch Paddington 2, my massage best friend in New York, he was working with Lin, because he works on lots of people in that community. And Lin one day was like, hey, can Andrew Garfield sing? And my friend, his name is Greg, he said, Andrew Garfield sing? He has the most beautiful voice I've ever heard. Oh, Lin, his voice is just stunning. The session ends. He's like, hey,
Andrew, with him a couple hours. Let us watch Paddington 2. He will sing his heart out.
But he literally finished the session with Lin, texted me immediately. He's like, hey, Andrew, can you sing?
Oh my God, that's amazing.
He had no idea.
That's a good friend.
And I was like, I mean, kinda? I don't know. And he was like, oh shit. I just told Lin-Manuel Miranda that you have the most beautiful angelic singing voice. God, why did I imagine that you just would? Shit. And I'm like, no, sorry, we'll figure this out. So anyway, that's how it started. And then Lin came and, you know, he saw angels and he was sniffing around and he kind of like, we had sushi and he handed me this script. He was like, this isn't going to make sense to you now, but later on it will. It was all very ceremonious. And then I learned about Jonathan Larson and that story and his life and him as a creative. And I knew about him, but I didn't know him as in depth. And I want to talk to you later about this in a more detailed way, because like, this is a story that his story has become, and the experience of making the film of Tick Tick Boom with Lin has become a profoundly emotional and kind of sacred, profound, important part of my life. It was coming out of a very, very difficult period of my life at the end of 2019 and into the beginning of 2020. And we'll talk about it at a later date. But I'll say about the vulnerability of singing, like I was surrounded by, you know, Robin De Jesus, Vanessa Hudgens, Joshua Henry, Alex Shipp, these genuinely incredible fucking singers, musical theater.
You guys tone it down a little bit. I mean, kind of.
Dude, I'm surrounded by the heavenliest choir of like divine entities just making like choral sounds. And I'm like in the middle going, and then like, and Josh Henry's like, damn, Andrew, shit, Andrew. And Robin's like, yeah, that's my baby. And I'm just like, guys, I'm so terrible compared to you all. No, but like,
I trust their opinion more than your own.
But that to be said, like the support of those people and of Lin and of that community generally, the musical theater people, they're just like, you know, my new favorite tribe of human beings. I like the best people in the world.
I can't wait. And we will have that discussion down the road.
Yeah, I would love to. Yeah.
I don't know how to bring up the Spider-Man stuff because obviously I don't even want to like ruin anything if there is something to ruin, except to
there isn't anything to ruin, bro. I have to just quickly just cut you off. There's nothing to ruin.
Really?
Like it's so crazy to
it's,
like-
this just gotten out of hand. This is all bullshit.
Dude, it's fucking hilarious to me because it's like, because I do have this Twitter account and I see like how often like Spider-Man is trending and it's like people freaking out about a thing. And I'm just like, guys, like,
oh, no.
I wish I could just like be able to speak to everyone and say like,
I how did really, this take off? Because you are.
I recommend that you chill. Like, listen, I can't speak for anything else apart from myself.
Sure.
Like they might be doing something, but then ain't none. Like I ain't got a call. So like,
okay. Well, that makes my life easier. Okay, no, that's good. That's unequivocal.
You know what it feels like, though? It feels like, because this hasn't come up yet in an interview, but like, do you ever play the game Werewolf?
No.
Or Mafia?
Yeah. Uh-huh.
You know that game? I think it's kind of similar, where it's like, you're convincing everyone that you're not in the Mafia.
Right.
Like, I feel like I'm in a game of fucking Werewolf or Mafia, where I'm like, I'm not the Werewolf. I promise you, I am not the werewolf. And everyone's like, you're the werewolf. You're the fucking werewolf. Look at him. He's like, he's doing.
Okay. So for the record, my friend, on a stack of whatever you have there, you are not, as of this taping, in or have any knowledge of being in the next Spider-Man movie.
I feel like haven't I just said that?
I just want to get really clear. This is the unequivocal yes, no answer.
I did not get a call.
Maybe they shot you guerrilla style, like in Main Street on the street.
In Main Street. Listen, I would have gotten a call by now. That's all I'm saying.
Okay.
I don't want to rule anything out. Maybe they want to call me. Maybe they're going to call me like and say like, hey, people want this. Like, I don't want to like say.
They're testing the waters.
Doing like a market research thing.
Have you watched all of Tom's work in the other Spider-Man movies? Like, is there anything you've seen him get to do that you're like, that would have been pretty fucking cool for me to get to play that scene or explore that arc.
Well, first of all, I just think Tom is brilliant, and like emotionally, he brings such an emotional kind of beauty to what he does, tenderness and vulnerability, but also this crazy strength. Like there's a real strength there.
Yeah,
it's like a kind of like an iron rod, and I really like of a spine. I mean.
For the record, you did not need to qualify. You just dug the hole even deeper.
I felt like I needed to qualify. I did this. I'm trying to think if there's anything that I've seen in those films. I mean, and I think John Watts is great. Like, and Zendaya and the young friend actor, is it Jacob, I think? It's a great situation they have there. And I'm trying to think of scenes. You know, there are certain things about like his suit that I'm jealous of. Like he had like the squirrel suit with the wings and the whatever. And I'm oh, you motherfucker. Like that shit is so cool. But yeah. And the fact that he got to hang out with the Avengers, that's cool.
I guess that's pretty cool.
That's cool.
One other film, if you'll indulge me, I do want to mention because I'm fascinated. I'm obsessed with Jessica Chastain. I've done a lot with her in the past, and she's incredible. Supremely talented. Oh my gosh. Yeah. I wouldn't necessarily have put on paper like top five actors I would get for Jim Baker, give me Andrew Garfield.
I take that as a compliment.
No, I think I meant it as a compliment.
Yeah. Yeah, no, totally.
But it's interesting. Like I'm seeing like, there are a lot of, I mean, you mentioned kind of the big stuff you do in mainstream, like running around with a microphone. There's an aspect of that to Jim Baker too. There's like a lot of, you've kind of had a spate of these kind of performative roles that
you're
are
right.
unusual.
You're right.
I'm just curious what the experience was playing that. I mean, I grew up with that scandal. I just remember it all.
Yeah.
What was that one like?
Oh God. To be honest, man, like it was, so first of all, Jessica is, you know, a genius, and just wait till you see the work that she's done in this film. Like, she's remarkable, which we all know, but she does something with this that is just so intoxicating and hypnotic and like you've never seen her before. It's really remarkable. So there's that. And that work, getting to work with her and also getting to work with Sherry Jones and the rest of the cast. It was just, it was really, and Michael Showalter, who I've loved since, Wet Hot American Summer, and
State and all that. Yeah, sure.
You know, that all of those kind of, early comedy films that he was doing. And I love The Big Sick and, so that it was, it was like this world that I didn't know much about, but was like, I started to research into the character and I was like, oh, this guy is so fascinating. Like, who are you? Like, who are you? You strange, fascinating creature,
yeah.
tender seeming guy. But to be frank, finding my way into him, it was painful. There's a lot of pain that I discovered there. There's a lot of woundedness. There's a lot of terror and fear. You know, you think about the prosperity doctrine, which is the thing that he kind of popularized when he started his ministry with Tammy Faye. It's the capitalist never enough thing that we live under now. So he was kind of a pioneer in this never enoughness.
Yeah.
And kind of monetizing the never enoughness, monetizing the emptiness, monetizing and chasing a kind of a forever external proof that God loves you. And, God wants you to have wealth. It says right here in the Bible, God wants you to be rich and God wants you to experience wealth here on earth. Like, that's just a big misreading of the original Greek. Like wealth, the word that wealth was translated from in the original Greek has a completely different meaning and derivation. It's spiritual wealth. It's not possessions. And so it was a kind of a merging of capitalism and God that I think was hadn't really been seen before, and reality television, because they were the first reality TV show family, really.
Right.
They were the first people that used the birth of a child as brought it out publicly and brought the baby on screen, and that their kids grew up on TV, which is obviously, now much more of a normal thing, but we can see the damage it does still under that kind of microscopic lens. So it was just fascinating to dive into how I understood him and what the access point for me was a man who feared his own emptiness, that was that was in constant need of approval from some father figure projected onto his idea of God, and he knew that he was succeeding in God's eyes if he had more and more money donated, right, no matter where the money went. And he got in over his head, and he got greedy. And there's the sex scandal as well, which is more complicated than we know about. And there's, talk of his, latent homosexuality, which was interesting as well to think about and to explore for myself. But it's just a fascinating world, and a kind of funny world as well. Like, it's kind of, kind of visually brilliant. And I won't lie, it wasn't all that pleasurable to play the character, because I discovered that in the way I found my way into him, wasn't in a very good place,
right,
generally, right, apart from when he was making lots of money and getting and helping people, which he wasn't able to do as much as he wanted to. He was mostly in the red, and he was mostly lost. And it was painful. On top of which, prosthetics suck, just simply.
That's the big takeaway, yeah.
But working with Jessica was the main kind of like.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, this is an embarrassment of riches, it sounds like, to come, even if it had some hopefully temporary psychic damage that you healed from, my friend. I hope you're doing well. You seem all right. The new film, Mainstream, I will say, by the way, just as a film geek, watching the opening titles and seeing American Zoetrope just pop up on the screen,
cool,
was like, oh, this is nice. The Coppola legacy continues. That's awesome.
Pretty cool.
So everybody should check out Mainstream. Andrew's delivering amazing work as always. And if we were nothing else today, Paddington 3 looks more likely than Spider-Man 3, apparently, for Andrew Garfield, at least at this date.
Call me. Anybody can call me anytime.
It's good to see you, my friend. Thanks,
buddy. Nice to see you, Josh. Take good care.
Hey guys, so as I teased earlier, we're launching a very exciting new series. This is called Happy, Sad, Confused Game Night. I know it's a very imaginative title. So this is going to be a new video series where you'll see your very favorite Happy, Sad, Confused regulars and me playing silly games. We're basically just going to be making fools of ourselves for your entertainment. And you can catch it all over at patreon.com/happysadconfused. Joining me now for a little tease of the shenanigans are the first Game Night victims. Or guests, same difference. It's Sam Heughan, Colin O'Donoghue, and Catherine McNamara.
How did we get roped into this, guys? Who knows?
I don't know.
Colin, what's your excuse?
I've got nothing else to do. What about you?
Yeah.
Right. I think probably blackmail and whiskey are why we're right. All here.
I've accumulated enough dirt on all of you guys over the years, and it's time to cash in. That's the secret. So do you guys have any shared, I feel like you guys have all interacted over the social medias, which means it's like long lasting, important friendships. Have you guys all met in real life or just via the Twitters and the Instagrams?
Well, Sam and I have met, but I don't know if Colin, I don't know if you and I have ever met in person.
No, we've never met, but Sam and I have met.
So, have you guys gone up for the same, have you gone up for the same roles, Colin and Sam?
Oh God.
I don't know. Probably. I don't know, actually. Maybe not, actually, because I was on once probably for so long. I'm not so sure. I went up for.
Do you know what? I think I did audition for once, but I have no idea what the role was. But I definitely auditioned for it. It might even be your part, but my accent was terrible. So
this is fascinating to dredge up because Sam, I don't know if you know this. The reason I know Colin is my brother. Created once. So basically, we scuttled your career, Sam, early on. I put the word in and said, if that guy Sam Heughan comes in, don't even go that way.
Do you know what? I went in on that show a couple of times. I never got the job. And you could have done me a favor, dude. Like, just give me the part. But, well, congratulations, Colin. You got the part. That's fantastic. Great.
Thanks very much. And I loved it.
But
it
was a good time. We then, Colin and I, we met, was it San Diego? Comic-Con.
Yeah, Comic-Con.
And we had a wee, I guess, like a little Twitter flirtation, you know.
Bands, quality Twitter bands.
Yeah.
Looking forward.
Where you wore a kilt, which is pretty.
I wore a kilt and you wore impressive. Eyeliner. Yeah.
Oh, wow.
Still wearing it. Yeah.
At least three of us have worn kilts. Kat, have you ever worn a kilt?
I mean, I've worn a plaid skirt, but I don't know if that counts.
I think that's a half point.
Okay.
I feel like Kat's the ringer in this group in that like she's probably accumulated the most game time over the years. You seem like a secret, like not so secret competitor.
Oh, I'm very competitive when it comes to game night. I in fact, one of the ways that my mafia group got through quarantine was doing Zoom mafia every single week. And then we started dressing up and it became a whole thing. We did theme night. It was a whole situation.
Yeah, we're all screwed, guys. We made a horrible mistake here.
Are you doing the voice? Do we all have to do voices now?
Poor Cat is being a trooper for us.
I want to also.
Some plugs before we get into the main event, because you guys always have a ton of stuff going on. Kat, I feel like even since the last time I spoke to you, like six new projects. People can check out The Stand, which is streaming internationally on Stars. You've got Trust, which is available to rent on and VOD. You've got Untitled Horror Movie, which is the actual title of the movie, let's be clear. That premieres on June 12th. Colin has, of course, The Right Stuff, which is on Disney Plus, and we can look forward to another installment of Troll Hunters coming soon to Netflix. Mm-hmm. And Sam Heughan is basically Oprah Winfrey. He's got every revenue stream going. He's got Men in Kilts, the book, the TV show, the ice show. What am I missing, Sam?
Oh, I'm going to do an interview with Kate. Meghan Markle and Harry and everyone else.
Yeah. You might as well try it. Yeah. Wait, is Men in Kilts season two a done deal? Are we going to get more of this?
I hope so. Yeah. In fact, I've got a pitch for it tomorrow. So let's hope it goes well. Yeah.
Amazing. Okay.
Depends if I win this or not.
Right. It's all riding on this. All right. Are you guys ready to play some silly games?
Let's play.
Yes.
All right. All right, guys, listening out there, remember to go to patreon.com/happysadconfused. The link is also in the show notes of this episode. And we'll all see you there.
Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
The first taste of rare bourbon you finally got your hands on. That's nice. At Caskers.com, we make this experience easy. Caskers is a one-stop spirit curator with an impressive selection of exclusive, sought-after, rare, and household names in the realm of premium spirits and champagne. Discover the top flavors of the year now by going to Caskers.com and using code WELCOME10 for $10 off your first purchase. Get $10 off your first purchase with code WELCOME10 at Caskers.com.